Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, June the 6th, 2014, and it's Aramaic Friday with Dr. Dale Hoffman. I'll put you a doctor in there too, Dale. So we welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Dale, I'll stack you against any doctor on the planet when it comes to the Aramaic.
Ah, I love to be stacked.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. For those who didn't happen to have the joy and delight of being with us on Monday night, we were in Asheville, North Carolina, just kind of bouncing Aramaicisms off of each other, and it was just an awesome, sweet, playful evening. And unfortunately, we don't have video from it, but we're making plans to get together actually and do a full 4-hour version of Aramaicism. So the first time that Dale and I get the opportunity to get together in the same city, that will be one of the projects we'll have going. Other than that, Dale, how can we share the next level with our audience of Aramaicisms, of the nuances that came out the other night in the workshop were just awesome. And what do you have on your mind today for sharing that with folks?
Well, you know, one of the things you and I have been talking about for a while is getting a hold of like good full-blown HD cameras and things like that camcorders to be able to start filming a lot of the stuff that we do so that we can catch those magic moments when they happen. So that's kind of one of the projects that was sort of on a side burner of mine that I've pulled back to the front burner, which would be probably doing like a crowdfunding project to be able to get a camera that I can do that kind of quality filming with. I mean, I've got these little HD cameras that aren't, you know, the kind of quality that would go onto a DVD or definitely not onto a Blu-ray. But one of the things is, as I do the book release, the beginning of next year, is to take a camera with me and document that to a certain extent too, sort of follow myself around with it. But I think, you know, Michael and I had a great conversation yesterday, and I was talking about how for so many years, especially when I was kind of in the beginning of waking up in my late teens and early 20s, one of the things I had always kind of yearned for was something that was very real from the people whose, you know, work I was studying and whose books I was reading over and over and over again. Meaning by that, not something that's posed like a sort of polished up film, but like behind the scenes type things, and basically like clips of their everyday kind of life, and sort of like something that's very personal. So it's something that I had on the sort of side burner for a while, but I've kind of pulled to the front burner, is showing people not only the onstage things, which are really amazing. Monday night was pure. It was just real magic. But also the kind of some of the, like something like Heartland, you know, I'd love to see, you know, like even like a 20-minute or even a 10-minute video about Heartland that sort of takes people around Heartland and shows them into the different buildings and some of the different things that happen there, maybe during a retreat or something. And that's definitely something I think people would be interested in, like seeing actual footage of a processing, a worksheet processing session at the Heart Center, or maybe like some still point breath work or something like that, to show people that they're not, basically, they're not the only one, because I know there's a lot of people that feel like they're not necessarily completely on the vine, because I get messages from people all around the world that are sort of disconnected geographically, and there's not really a lot of other people thinking the way they do. That's the beauty of the radio show and everything as well. But something that would be able to show that sort of real everyday essence to people, I think, is something that a lot would be interested in. I know I would. So that's one of my next things is when I'm done with the book, which is, wow, I just finished completely polished off the second of three sections of my book, and now I just have to basically add a couple of pages to the third section, and then the first draft, the first complete draft of my book is complete. So, hooey-vey, it's been a lot of work up to this point, but it's exciting, though.
I know how it goes. I know how it goes, for sure. Well, we had a meeting this morning, Jeannie and I. She had been looking for a new personal care physician in Bristol, and you know, her family is, and we spend quite a bit of our time, and was introduced to a medical doctor when she went to his site. It was like she could have flipped back and forth between his site and our site, and it was the same conversation. So we had set up a meeting with him this morning, spent about an hour with he and his wife. We're scheduled on Friday to teach first century Aramaic forgiveness to his medical staff. And it was actually very much like the conversation with you and I on Monday night. I'd start a sentence, he'd finish it. He'd start a sentence, I'd finish it. And it was just like one mind. And he hit me on the shoulder. He said, where have you been all my life? So it was pretty cool to run into a medical doctor who knows that healing is about healing and it's not about pills. And, you know, one of his comments was how pills will shut down one part of the system so the other part appears to look better, but it's nothing to do with healing. And so it's pretty cool. You know, we're only going to be here for a week, and they were like, well, let's get on this. I'll tell you what, we'll get our staff to come in. We'll pay them to come in on Friday morning if you can come. So we're going to do a four-hour Y workshop with his with his staff in his medical office. But it was just cool. It was very reminiscent of our conversation on Monday night. So it was pretty cool.
I remember you speaking about him the other night at one of the events. So that's beautiful that worked out.
So we just met him for the first time. And then, you know, we were out in Portland. Actually, kind of by accident, some friends of ours live in Portland, and when we finished in Richland, Washington, we had an invitation to go spend time at their beach house, and unbeknownst to us, the week we were in Richland, a friend was brought by his wife or girlfriend to the workshops, didn't know we were there. Someone had studied with us in St. Louis 20-some years ago, and so they've started a support group already, and Tuesday night they had 19 people at a support group in Portland, Oregon. So things are kicking in and rocking there. So it's fun to watch how people are starting to comprehend the importance of that Aramaic language, the nuances of the Aramaic, and just how much has been lost in translation. You mentioned a book which I need to find called Found in Translation.
Yes.
But just what we've got yet to find from the Kabbalists. One of the projects that this new thing that we're setting up in Costa Rica hopefully will come together. We're going to do crowdfunding on that. We'll come together and provide the funding to take the translation work to the next level on the Kabbalists, because there's really not a way to quantify what we don't know yet from that manuscript. And so that's certainly a project that's got to come up on the front burner when there's funding to do it. So you know, it's interesting to see how it all comes together.
We have there's not going to be any shortage of next things for us, because there's always going to be an infinite more to know, to come into realization of. And that book that I spoke of, it's called Found in Translation, How Language Shapes Our Lives and Transforms the World. You can get it on Amazon for like $12. And it's really even for me, as much as I've done with language studies, and it really was refreshing for me. It kind of recalibrated my system in such a way that it almost gave me a fresh outlook on what I thought I was already doing. I can put it that way. It's funny because I take so much flack from, you know, the real scholars who went through some sort of different, you know, educational institutions and studied certain things and read certain trade papers. And it's funny because I read the same trade papers. I've studied the same things that they studied in their institutions. I've found it very interesting. It's intriguing that if there's anything I'm trying to do by more study, it's by basically breaking apart my biases or resonating up anything in me that's keeping me from seeing the absolute truth and having that direct experience. And I noticed that if I was in some sort of theological system, whether it be if I was heavy in some sort of leg of Christianity, and of course of the thousands of Christian legs, they're all different and they all have different things that say that they're correct. And or if I was in any some sort of cycle, I'm looking for something specific. It's like if you go looking for something, you're going to find it, and you're going to mangle what's actually on the page to fit whatever your frame of mind is. And the reason I study so much is to basically do that, to shatter my frame of mind, to just see what's on the page, and to just call a lot of these people who have sort of rested on their laurels, you know, who's a lot of their work I've admired for decades, and say, look, you know, what's all of the fullest possible nuance of what these words on the page could mean? Let's not rest in words like glory or blessing or whatever it may be, grace. Let's say, you know, what actually did the Aramaic, what's the fullest possible nuance of what the Aramaic language could say, was saying about these words? Because what happens is a lot of people will approach me and say, you know, why, you know, weren't these just sort of common backwater yokels back in the first century? And therein lies the number one bias and also the greatest constrictor, or almost like it's almost like a strangulation of the teachings of Yeshua, is that so many whatever researchers, scholars, etc., want to dumb down all of the possibility of what he could have been saying, because all we have is what's on the page at this point. People want to dumb that down to what the common everyday person would understand. Yet, of course, if they actually read his teachings, he's constantly looking at the disciples, not only just the people around him that are following, but the disciples themselves saying, hello, McFly. Well, he doesn't say hello, McFly, but aren't you guys, how can you guys not be getting this? Or Nicodemus, you're a leader of the Judeans. How can you not be understanding what I'm saying to you? And that's one of the biggest reasons that I realized I didn't want to go through that framework of the pre-established institutions to do what I did. It made it real difficult. I had to search out and find several $100 a piece textbooks and things that other people were studying, and I had to go out and buy them, or I had to sit at libraries for months on end to read these things. But I did, and by constantly seeking to basically shatter my biases and frameworks of the day before, I learned new things every day, and that found in translation book was a part of basically showing me several things that were right in front of my nose that I hadn't even comprehended yet. So I definitely highly recommend that book. It's an easy read, too. It's only a couple hundred pages, and it's not heavy scholarly stuff. It's sort of for the everyday person.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I just ordered it from Amazon, so I'll have it in a couple days. Well, anything in particular? Let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see if he's got anything in mind and as a direction to take our show today. Dr. Tim, are you with us, sir?
I don't see him on the switchboard.
Not here today. Okay, well, that's unusual for him to miss Aramaic Fridays, but well. So, Jeannie, are there any hands up, or is there anything in the chat room happening that we would be benefited by addressing?
No. Peace and I are having a conversation in the chat room, and nobody has their hand up, so if someone presses 1, you're first in line with no waiting.
Awesome. So Dale, give us a little more description on where your book is going.
Well, it's a part of a 3-book series. It's called the first one. The title is Echoes of an Ancient Dream, Book 1. And the subtitle of the first book of Book 1 is Toning the Aramaic Words of Yeshua. And the second book's going to go a little bit deeper, and the third's going to go deeper still. But it's in three sections. The first section is called something. And the three sections are essence, and the first one is about my journey, like how I came in my journey to get to this place where I am with the teachings. And what it is it's like basically stories of how I came into your work, how I, you know, found the stuff of like Rocco Errico, Neil Douglas Klotz. And it also talks a lot about, like, the gist of the first book is really not as much in translation. It's more in toning, actually doing tonations of the words and some of the phrases of Yeshua. And I talk a lot in that first section about how it's something we do naturally as children. When I was a kid, you know, my 3-year-old Shemaiah will walk in the room and just go, and then walk back out. I see that when Mikey, who's 12, almost 13, if he gets overwhelmed, I can hear him humming as a process. It literally can be part of the forgiveness process. It's a way of a focus, much like breath can be, though it doesn't work without also doing breath. But I also talk about how when my mother passed, in her passing, the last sounds that she could make were very basic tones. So I actually got up into the bed with her and held her in my arms. She was just racked from cancer, just a shell of who she was, covered in tumors. And I held her in my arms, and I literally just toned these simple sounds with her. That's the first section. The second section is a little bit of translation thing of, you know, asking people to take a few steps back. And the second section is called The Word. And then the subtitle of that is Seeing Beyond the Letters on the Page. And it's asking people to take a step back, let go of everything that we think we know, everything we think we've learned about the Yeshua teachings or the Jesus teachings, whatever people want to call them, and just be able to see the forest for the trees. Let go as much as we're able to of our concepts, of the things that we think we know, and just allow the slate to be cleaned and recalibrated. And what I do is I offer forth several really juicy nuances in not only in the Jesus teachings, but in the Bible in particular, a little bit from the Old Testament, mostly from the New Testament, of the depth of, that can be contained within just one single word. And then the third section is called Process, Toning as a Spiritual Practice. And what that is it starts with me giving a little brief history of toning from around the world, very brief, just a couple of pages, and then telling people, look, the magic in toning is not doing it correctly. It's not doing it right. There's no actual rule book for this. It's just about doing it. It's like, as an example, am I breathing right? Just breathe. Step one, just breathe. And this, it's just tone. And I start people off just working with very basic sounds like ooh, ah, a, e, and toning like ooh, and seeing how that feels, actually writing down, what does this feel like to me? And recognizing that it's less about a perfect sound, it's more about our openness to the experience of that tone or that sound, much like the Yeshua teachings. And then I move into toning some of the words of Yeshua and then toning a couple of his phrases. And then at the end of the book is a little section of toning for families, toning for children, and toning for couples. And it also touches on things like toning in the workplace, toning in traffic, in different moments when it's amazing how just making a simple sound, even halfway under our breath, can completely transform the state of our being. And then the last section of the book, or the last piece of the book, is just a couple of paragraphs saying, look, this isn't about doing it perfectly. This is about just doing it. And it's about trying it and experimenting it. And then I encourage people to not only tone those Aramaic words, but just to tone simple, basic sounds and words and see how they feel and to get really deep into that. And then the second book is going to launch from that point into what some of the oldest languages that we're aware of, like, you know, Aramaic, Akkadian, Phoenician, Sumerian, Proto-Sinaitic, Egyptian, Coptic, things like that, what the different sounds meant in the different languages. And I'm actually going to compare in the second book the alphabets to each other, which are, it's profound when you actually see that, as an example, 4,000 years ago, the sound I is the letter Ayin in Aramaic, and it was literally written carved into stone about 4,000 years ago as an eyeball. And the word hand, which is the E, the letter Yod, which means hand, it sounds like E, it literally was carved as an arm with fingers on it about 4,000 years ago. And that, to me, is so incredibly intriguing. Just amazing, amazing stuff. And I'm really doing my best in the first three books to keep it very streamlined and distilled. And then from the third book onward, that's when I'm just going to go sort of hog wild and start releasing the Beatitudes and huge sections of the Jesus teachings and translations, cross-referencing a lot of those Gnostic Gospels that weren't allowed into the New Testament and into the Bible. So, wow, it's been it's exciting. It's just really exciting. I've worked for decades to get to the place that I'm at now, and I've actually written the book, which is wild. I found myself for years saying, I'm writing a book. But I realized I wasn't actually sitting down and writing it, except for little blips here and there. So I just pushed everything off to the side of my life and, you know, did a few what appeared to be sacrifices, and I started writing. And, wow, it's exciting.
So one of the things you say, Dale, every time we come together pretty much, or when we converse, oftentimes you said it on this show, is how delighted you are that you started out with the understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness as understanding the mechanics of the tool and the use of the tool compared to the way even most of the translators that are translating from the Aramaic are still talking about forgiveness out of the Greek brain cells of I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. How does this relate to the focal point of where you're going with the Book of Tony? That's a very distinct direction for you, I see. And of course, I got a taste of it the other night in the workshop. But how do you see the forgiveness as tying in there?
That's a good question, because the introduction of the book, which I have partially written, almost maybe two paragraphs into it, I say that this is a tool. But there's one indispensable tool, which is the tool of forgiveness. And I see this as something that can – it's such a good question. It's something that I see can add a nuance to forgiveness. But the thing about toning is it's not the forgiveness process itself. And one of the things that there's an echo of through the entire book and right at the end of the book – it's in the beginning, it's in the end, and it echoes throughout the book – is making sure that people get a hold of, especially – I think the best way, for me, the biggest kaboom or wow that I've had from people is the ones that have seen either gone to one of your Why Again workshops, or what I really encourage people to do is get a hold of the DVD to be able to see it and stop it and rewind it and see what you're doing on that whiteboard. You and I had a great conversation about that whiteboard yesterday, and to actually see them and actually put it into practice. It is not something, and I say it right in the beginning of the book, it's not something that takes the place of the forgiveness work. Like I said, I see it as an aspect, but it's not something that, let's push the forgiveness work to the side and just do this. Because as an example, one of the things that will happen is I would honestly say most of the people that come to my toning events, to be from the feedback that I get, is they want to get stoned on God and they want to just feel good. They're like, oh, can we just do toning? I don't want to learn anything. I don't want to do a practice. I don't want to actually have to put pen to the paper. I just want to tone. And it's a subject that I hit so often in the book, saying, you know, this is not an escape. Toning is not something that you do and push everything else to the side just because it feels good. I actually see it as a literal transformational a transmutation or recalibration process that can work in absolute synergy with the forgiveness process, but alone by itself without the forgiveness understanding, it could be a finger pointing at the moon. That's why I'm telling people all the time that this isn't about feeling good. This is not about the buzz. This is about opening our perception of energetically what's going on in our energy system and getting into a greater tune with that. It's not an escapism, and it's one of those things, yeah, that I would say most of the people that come, it's just one of those things. There's going to be a crystal bowl. Let's sit with it. Let's listen to it. And a lot of people, because it feels good, and feeling good is good, but feeling good is not necessarily actually living it and doing the work and going through those processes of transformation. So it really is a good question.
Yeah, to me, the foundation of every way of understanding the world has to include moving out of the way what is incorrect. And because the root, the basis of the output of the mind is so deeply rooted in genetics and 1,000 generations of some wonderful stuff, but also some pretty crazy stuff, until one starts to clean up the output of the database, then the database can't properly comprehend, can't properly output an understanding that's in line with truth or a reality structure that even starts to align with the truth of what's going on. So it's such a key part in the process. I just wondered how you saw that in relationship to the toning process and focus in that direction.
To me, forgiveness is the key, more than any other. And that's the thing. It's like, and I think that's you know, probably obviously I would say why 3/4 of the people come just wanting to get, I say, stoned on God, because I'm using the toning to remove the layers, and I think the average person comes in to the toning just to feel good. And that's why I wanted to start my, you know, my written work in the world with the toning, because it will bring people in and it'll help bring them through a transition to going into the deeper work, bring the people in who do even want to get stoned on God. And then when they get into it, they're going to go, hold on, wait a second. There's something entirely else going on here. There's many more layers here than I realize. It's not just about feeling good. So it's, I see it as, like, that's another thing that ties in with, like, people ask me a lot of times, why so much Jesus stuff? And I say, well, you know, that would be like saying to, you know, Picasso, why in God's name would you want to paint? And why would you only want to paint in your style? Why don't you want to paint in somebody else's style? It's interesting because for me, I see the Yeshua teachings, not only are they what lights me up the most, but they're such a great open door for so many people, especially in the West, more than any other spiritual door, the Jesus door, as I would call it, is the transition point for more people than any other in the Western hemisphere in terms of through the spiritual teachings. So what better way and what more profound teacher, just looking at it in that way without even going into the depth of what a lot of what's said in Aramaic, just that alone to me is something of tremendous value. And something I said to a friend of mine just a couple hours ago, I said, you know, if there's anything different about what I'm doing, is just that I'm talking about the things that so many people feel in their gut, but people just aren't talking about. And I'm not sure why people aren't talking about them, but I'm hitting those things right off. And like I say, it also in the different places I go, I say, I'm not really here for you. I'm here for your children. I'm here to help you let go so your children can shine exactly as they are authentically in this world. And yeah, I see the toning as the entry point, but I'm actually already really excited for what comes beyond the third book, because that's when I'm really going to be running at full speed and completely wide open in a whole different way. And it'll be great because a lot of those people will transition in with the toning work, and then they'll be able to come sort of faster downstream with me when I go further into the translations and the teachings beyond that point.
Cool. Well, why don't you give us a couple of examples of toning, for instance, the Abun, the first word in the Lord's Prayer, and just share those sounds with us, and maybe everybody who's listening can just kind of tap into that energy and get an experience of what you're talking about.
Definitely. You know, it's funny, when the first time I was asked this on a radio show maybe like 7 years ago, I remember when they asked me, I was like, I wonder how that's going to translate on the phone, but it translates pretty well on the phone. I'll just make one sound so people get an idea of what toning means, though, like I say, there's no rule book. It's not really about a perfect technique. It's just about doing what helps your heart feel open, essentially. The first sound of the Lord's Prayer, when we tone, we focus less on the consonants, the harder k, d, w, y sounds, and more on the vowels, like the e, o, a sounds. Now, in a far Western dialect, the first word of the Lord's Prayer would sound like abwoon, kind of like A-B-W-O-O-N, abwoon. There's some places in Syria that's actually closer to abwunach. And then if you go further into the east, it's closer to Awoon, like A-W-O-O-N, or in some, there's a few small cultures where it's actually closer to Aoun, like the ah sound, ah, and then O-O-N. So what I'll do is I'll just tone the Aoun sound one time, just as an example of what it can sound like. And I can tell you this, I haven't even started toning it, and I can already feel the shift in my being just knowing what's about to happen. And that feeling that I'm feeling even before doing it or after doing it is what I call the echo or the reverberation. It works on you even before you actually do it, and that's one of the beautiful things. So now I'm going to just do the tone once. And then whenever you're ready, I'll just stay silent after that. Whenever you're ready to say something, just take it wherever we're going to go. So everybody just listen to the Aoun sound one time.
Wow. I felt the vibration of it like you do with the crystal bowls and things. It was a phenomenal feeling. That was awesome.
It's so simple, too, and it gets beyond the what it means. That's why I love toning with children, because with children, I don't tell them this word means this, and then we tone it. I just say, this is how it sounds, let's do it. And then I ask them, what do you feel about this? How does it feel to you? What are the qualities? And I realize if I really know what I'm talking about, I can communicate with children and they'll get it. If I don't, then I can't. So it really keeps me distilled and clear. And it really does transcend any right or wrong definition of the sound. It's really about just being open to feel it.
Yeah, I could feel it in my core, and it was just an energy in itself, like I said, a vibration almost, and just could feel it in my core. It was just, that was awesome. It's very peaceful.
Yeah, I like, as an example, if I'm, say that I'm late for something, stuck in traffic, whatever, I will not close my eyes, but even just driving down the road or stuck in a traffic jam, I'll just, Aoun is the sound that I make the most often. Not for any particular reason. It just seems to be a sound that I'm really drawn to. And you can just make that sound once, let alone three times, and be in a completely different place than before you made the sound. And like I say, if you become conscious of the tone before you start making it, it already starts working for you, through you before you actually start making the sound. And that, to me, that's what I call that echo. And that's one of the most profound parts of the experience, is that it's not bound in time and space. You know, that's what's so intriguing about it with me.
Yeah, that was awesome. Michael, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. I was just kind of in the space of it.
Mm.
And actually, one of the things you remind me about, it was kind of an interesting scene in a movie we saw recently, where Matthew McConaughey it's actually an incredibly gross movie, but there's an interesting scene where McConaughey is sitting in a restaurant with Leonardo DiCaprio, and he's instructing him on going into the world of high finance, and he's just going through, all kinds of crazy stuff, and all of a sudden he starts to pound on his thymus gland, and along with that, tone. You know, they're talking about the stress and the overload, and so he just pounds on his thymus gland and does this toning thing, and it's it's quite an interesting scene because DiCaprio, after he does it, then just looks around the room like, what kind of crazy thing's going on here? But it was interesting. We thought this has to be something they just ad-libbed in the movie. So Dini looked it up online, and they told the story about how this got into the film. And DiCaprio, they were looking for something to, I guess, spice up the particular scene that they were doing. And DiCaprio says to
McConaughey,
yeah, says, you know, what's the thing you were doing backstage before the, you know, before this scene? He says, oh, that's just a thing I do to relax myself, and it's just what he does when he's getting ready to get on the stage. He says, well, why don't we put that in the scene? Let's do that. And so he does it, and, I mean, it's pretty hilarious, but this is something that, you know, pretty high-level top actor does in order to smooth out his energy before he goes on stage to do a scene in the movie. I thought it was kind of – it's interesting how it taps in, and I hadn't thought of that before in light of it until you made that sound, and it just went right back to McConaughey just doing that toning process.
Wow, I've got that on – we've had that on Blu-ray for a couple of months, Wolf of Wall Street, right? And I haven't watched it yet, so now I'm intrigued that I've got to watch that.
You absolutely do not want your children in the room, though.
Well, I would honestly say that most of our – I think Loretta maybe feels frustration from time to time, or even the kids, because I don't watch a lot of movies. I just – when I'm sort of walking in and around the room, a lot of the stuff that they watch, you know, it just seems like such a waste of time to me. So it's like I don't even watch something unless I know that you know, and it's some of the stuff that I watch is incredibly difficult to watch, but if I know that there's some sort of an opening process in it, those are the ones that I'll watch. And we've had it for several months. I just haven't watched it. So, but yeah, a lot of the stuff, we don't, that's one of the things that takes us a while to get to certain movies because we don't want the kids to be around during it. So, which is an interesting thought there too.
You definitely don't want them around this week.
Mm.
Pretty bizarre. So how about doing that tone once again?
Okay. Or I can do a different one. I can do this one. What I'll do is spoken colloquially or on a day-to-day basis, it would sound like this. Nuhra. There's a huh sound in the end, Nuhra. But the way we tone it is the huh sound in the middle, that letter hey. Isn't quite so pronounced, so it's just Nura. Now, Nura is another really powerful one. The Ra sound alone, actually, is something that people can tone, something that kids love to tone Ra, which is a sound that goes back to the earliest known languages that we are aware of as anthropologists and linguists. The earliest languages we've ever known of, Ra is there, and it always means something to the effect of a shining forth of heat and light, the light of the sun, a blazing heat, whatever it may be, or the light of awareness, which is what it means in this case. The nu sound means a reflection, and the ra sound means light, so it's a reflective light. So I'll make the nu ra sound one time. People can just feel this out. And again, I'll stay silent until someone else wants to come in, and when you're ready, say something. Nu.
Much empty airspace, we'll go ahead and tap into it. I could stay with that one for 10 minutes probably, but for me,
yeah.
I could feel that behind my sinuses and in my brainstem.
Which is where that's an interesting thing, because there's certain tones, especially certain sounds, the Ra sound especially, that the Ra sound really opens itself up right around where the pineal gland is, a bit behind the third eye, and it feels to me, Ra feels like it's a relationship with the third eye working up toward the crown chakra to help open the crown. And actually the last sound that I'll make in a toning circle is usually Ruach, which is the Hebrew Aramaic Rucha, or Ruach in Hebrew, which is breath, spirit, the eternal force. There's so many different ways to translate Ruach. But the ruah sound is a sound, especially when you push it up into your register, like, in other words, a little bit higher in pitch. Now, a pitch that's high for me might be too high for someone else or too low for, like, you know, Celine Dion or something. So everyone's pitch, everyone's resonant pitch is going to be a little bit different. But if you do that ruah, it's another one of those ones that I put at the end of my gatherings because it has a certain socket frying effect to it that really just – ruah is one of those sounds that just requires 100% complete experience of, and it requires nothing less than that. And it's funny because I can hear in a circle – up to about 20 people, I can hear individual voices. Beyond that, they kind of merge together a bit. But if there's someone who's in the room that feels very reserved or someone that can't get out of their head or someone who I can just tell they're not opening completely to the process, I can actually hear them during the toning. And I can hear, like, if everyone in the room's going, ruah, I can hear that person going, ruah. I can actually hear it, not being involved in the process. And the magic of toning in a group, and that's one-on-one, face-to-face, as a family, as a classroom, or as, you know, 20, 30, 40 people, is that synergy and that gorgeous resonance within the room. It's like meditation in the room or doing the forgiveness process in a room full of people. It's the willingness that everyone's willingness adds into greasing that wheel, so to speak. And I'm not necessarily saying it makes it more easy, but it does allow us to open more to the process of surrendering into the tone itself. And it's such an incredibly magical, seemingly magical process that it would be amazing if we could just get outside of all of the different words that we spit out in that we call prayer and just get back to basic tones, which have nothing to do with languages, nothing to do with any kind of mental concept of what it means, just making the tones. But I know a lot of people would fight against that in public gatherings too, because they would say it's a prayer. When unfortunately, well, yeah, it is. It's real, true prayer, but it's not some sort of mental concept. And unfortunately, that's one of the reasons why culture is starting to run so crazy, I believe, is because we're not recalibrating the system before we go into making the decisions and the choices that we need to make on the level of the economy, the politics, whatever it may be. But there's been such a fighting cat and mouse back and forth that really was initiated in the West by the fundamentalist Christian church, sort of forcing that idea down people's throats, that have made, you know, the atheists and these different people with different views, Muslims, say, well, hey, what about us? And I really see toning as a possibility for opening the door for everyone. But even in a lot of school systems, a moment of silence is called prayer, and they don't even allow that. So let's just keep forward and keep going, and who knows 10, 20 years down the line how that would manifest. But it's funny because it really goes beyond any kind of religion, any kind of language, and it goes back to the base sounds of human communication at their absolute core. And that's why I think it lights me so up so much, not just because I feel good, but it goes beyond that feeling. It goes into my psyche. It's into my soul. It's deep into all the fibers of my being. And wow, it, just a simple sound. It's amazing what it can do.
Definitely. Very cool. So what would be another tone that we could engage?
Wow, there's so many. A sound that I love to make is a sound that a lot of people don't even realize is Aramaic, because they think it's Latin or Italian, which it is Latin and Italian or Spanish. It's in all the Romance languages. That actually comes from a Semitic root. And I don't know if Aramaic is the original language that this sound comes from. We don't know that yet. People, I shy away from drawing conclusions to things that we don't actually have connectors to. I mean, if I put a hypothesis out, I'll say to people, this is a hypothesis. This is not a fact. And much of today's facts are tomorrow's fodder in a way. But the word, when we use the word Lord in English, I've talked about it on the show a lot. A lot of people don't realize that that's a Middle English term. It's a feudal term. It was right at the end of the Old English transitioning into what was called Middle English. And that word Lord is a word that Jesus never said. Yeshua was never called Lord, never called anyone Lord. The reason I know that as a fact is because the word Lord did not exist. It didn't come up until the medieval feudal times in England. And, of course, it was the bread giver. It was the power person, the guy that owned the land that had the peons working for him. But that word Lord in Aramaic is the sound Maria. Maria. The mar sound in Maria, the mar sound means a place of strength. When you hear the re sound, re has a similar meaning to what the ra sound has. It means a shining forth of light. But the interesting thing about re is it has a feminine quality to it. So it's a shining forth of a feminine light from the ah, and the ah is the wholeness of everything. And what this would mean is not a Lord as a power person, as in you have power over me, but actually the acknowledgement that someone, like as a child, or, you know, you meet people occasionally. I meet people on the road that just exude and shine this gorgeous feminine light that you don't see with the eye. It's sensed, but it's not even sensed with the five senses. It's something that's almost like a resonance within the being. And it comes from like the ground root of all of creation. These people just shine this, and we all shine it. We shine it in in the process of still point breathing. It comes in after a good forgiveness session, and it's the candle that we were given that we throw the bushel basket on top of. Children, when they come in, are shining that light, and that's what Maria means. And I'll tone that Maria sound. You'll notice that sometimes I use the same tone, sometimes I go higher, sometimes I go lower. Like I say, there's really not a magic sound that works every time. Even me being the same person, there's some days that the lower tones work better for me, some days the higher or the middle tones work better for me with different tones. I kind of just move it around. So I'll do the same thing. I'll make that Maria sound and then just leave it open to wherever we go from there, and I'll just stay silent after the tone. So this is just as it sounds. Maria is the sound. Maria.
I breathe with you. Indeed, so it means that we have a couple of callers in the chat room. So let's check with Jeannie on what she's got to share. Sweetie?
Yes. First of all, in the chat room, there was a question, and then we do have two callers. And the question is, what information is there on the other side of those tones? What physical events have you placed upon the spiritual connections?
I'm not sure I follow that.
Like when you tone, is there information on the other side of the toning that you get or that you receive?
That's not what's important. What's just important is just opening up and being open in the process. Like I was saying, you know, there's the echo before and the echo after. Let go of trying to find something. Just be open in the process itself. And what you need in that present moment will reveal herself to you. Really, truly, one of the things that I lay as a base several times in the book is, let go of trying to find something, seeking anything, having any kind of a question. Just be open in the process. That's really what the feminine means. It's not seeking to find something. It's realizing that, you know, in the words of Rumi, don't look for water, be thirsty. It's realizing that what we're looking for is what is looking. And when we allow ourselves to just be completely open in the moment, this present moment right now, whatever we need or don't need will reveal itself or won't reveal itself. And I really, truly, one of the things that I touch on the most in my toning circle is let go of any thought process whatsoever going into this. Just be open. The one thing I do say is, you know, I speak of that echo, which is something, it's that very intimate internal resonance or that vibration tonality that I often feel before or after the process. But when I go into the toning, that's not something I'm thinking about. I just do it. And you just do it, and you just be open to the process. Whatever you need will happen in that moment. Yeah, it's a good question.
Awesome. Okay, and there's two callers. And, well, I thought Judy was on there, but I don't see her now. So the next caller is area code 616. You're on the air. Area code 616.
Welcome to the show. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? 616.
Okay. I guess they must have stepped away from their phone or something. And I do see Judy on here, but she doesn't have her hand up, so I'm going to turn her on. Is this Judy and or Mick? You're on? Well, Judy? Do you have your mute
button?
Hello,
Judy. Are you there?
Or Mick.
Okay. Well, I guess not.
All right. So nobody else has their hand up right now. So we've got about 7 minutes. So if someone presses one, you're next in line.
Wow, that was fast. 7 minutes. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Very quick.
Okay,
we do
have a hand up now. It's 541. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Julie from Ashland, Oregon. And hi. You know, I just got on the show. I don't know what you've been talking about. I was talking to another student of Aramaic teachings from our workshops, and she and I were looking at abandonment, and it's something that we've both been afraid to look at. If we're going to do a worksheet tomorrow on whatever transpires, we've set something in motion and we've made a commitment to connect tomorrow and do a worksheet together, and part of me is just breathing easier and happy that I'm finally going to address something. And it's really unconscious, and I don't know what it is, so then I'm also scared. Or there's that energy of on the edge of this is a good thing, and I have to trust that not knowing what it is okay. And I don't know what else to say except to encourage others and ask you if you have anything to say about that, either Dale or Michael.
Just, Michael, you know, the biggest piece of input that I would have on it would be to make sure that as you do it, you're breathing and you're in a state of willingness. And know that, especially when you invite Rukka in, and for those who are new to the show, Rukka is the Aramaic term for that elemental force in us that can support us in the process of healing, that knows how to move throughout the whole energy system and bring about shifts and changes, that you're in trust, that you can trust that that power knows how to handle whatever you're going to access and go for it and let it be handled. Deb, do you have a thought
there?
It kind of almost goes into what I had said about the toning in. To me, if there's anything I've learned after all the years of tools and techniques and everything. Above all else, it's being open in this moment right now, just being open to whatever it is that's happening right now. That's really what that phrase, you know, sufficient unto the day or the evils thereof. That word evil meant a moment of being off the mark or a moment of being, really what it meant was unripe, when the word unripe meant not present in the moment. And when we're open in the moment, the tools that we need to access are going to be there, but above all else, it really is, for me, about just being fully present with whatever's happening right now. And whatever we need is going to, and there's not going to be more than we can handle in any present moment. That's another thing that's really a huge part of it, is just, and it sounds cheesy because it's such a sort of canned phrase, but following the heart and just letting her lead us where we need to go.
Wow, thank you. Perfect. All of that. Thank you, Michael, too. I mean, that's the part of me that's so excited about how amazingly this all works. And it is getting gentler. And I know that it's with respect when I give it over to Ruka Dakucha. And it just feels like there's this huger healing going on, and all I have to do is allow myself to get breathed through and see through and to the other side of letting it be removed from me rather than significantly anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting easier, I think, I feel.
The load's getting lighter, yeah.
Even though it might be heavier stuff and scarier stuff, it's getting lighter.
Well, and what's happening in essence is that you're getting stronger. As you do your work, you're building those so-called, we could call them spiritual muscles. So the load that yesterday you couldn't even have started to pick up seems rather light. And as you build your strength, Yeshua talks about how his burden is light. And the lightness of the burden comes from strength. And, you know, what you handled in your first worksheet, if we were to put an analogy to it, you know, might have been a pound, and it seemed like a great burden. But after what you've been doing your work now, when's the last time we were out there? About 4 years now? After
mm-hmm.
4 years of continuously doing your work, you pick up 75 pounds, and it's no big deal. It's light. It's easy. I have the strength. And as you engage in the tools and engage in the process, you develop the strength. And so the issue that you couldn't even conceive of looking at or working through 4 years ago now becomes, well, this is going to be a biggie, and I've got the strength to do it. And, of course, the beauty of this community that comes together every day, or at least during the weekdays, as support, that we do have literally each other's support in the process, and that is, to me, monumental. And
mm-hmm.
so we're pretty much out of time. Our show is just about complete. I'll just say that if anybody's in Bristol, Tennessee, or in that area, any ladies, that is, that Jeannie has her whole woman workshop tomorrow at the YWCA right in downtown Bristol, Tennessee. And I will be in Asheville, North Carolina tomorrow doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. There is still some space in that workshop, so if anybody's in the Asheville, North Carolina area, you'd be welcome to come and join us. We'd be delighted to have that participation. And week after next, we'll be doing some things in St. Louis. I'm going to be leaving here and heading to St. Louis, so you can check with me at CSL there in St. Louis. And there's another event or two that we're still working on putting together. So we'd be delighted to have you join us in St. Louis. And then, of course, be heading to Heartland for Food Fund Forgiveness Work Project and then moving into the intensives for this summer. So have a blessed day and give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Give them the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. www.mindshiftersradio.com.
Evolving continuously.